Thank you for listening to the Weekly Market Outlook. It is our pleasure to bring an industry-leading market analyst to provide you with the most value possible in your farm business. Please reach out anytime by emailing cbarron@agviewsolutions.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of the AgView Pitch. Joe V filling in for Chris and Shay today. I'm here with Jared Creed and Pete Meyer. Guys, we are in not so sunny, kind of sunny Phoenix.
Nah.
It's grayish. It's been, what, 60s? It's not terrible. It's better than where I came from anyways.
It didn't rain yesterday on the golf course, so that's a good thing.
Yeah, no, that's great. We're going to talk markets today for a little bit, guys. So we had what looked like maybe a rally attempt in row crops here the last few days, and now maybe we've softened up just a little bit. I just don't have very many good things to say about the markets, and I'd love to tell the crowd something good here. Do you guys have anything good to say?
Well, I think that there was some discussion yesterday or this week about the about ethanol production just taking a dive, and I think a lot of people are kind of looking at that a little bit. But that's going to be short lived. But as far as market prices are concerned, it does seem like prompt corn is kind of happy around the 450 level. I know that doesn't make farmers very happy, but the bean market really is the one that seems to have the most volatility. At a 25 cent move higher, 25 cent move lower. So, I don't know. I think that, Joe, you talked about it a little bit in your presentation here in Phoenix about the net short in corn that the funds currently hold over 200,000 contracts, but it pales in comparison to what is understood to be still out there in the marketplace. And, you brought up a very good statistic and we looked at it actually, or I looked at it with another friend of a mutual friend of ours. And, the last time the funds had this big a position, let's just call it for a round number, a billion bushels or whatever, and they got out, the market only rallied 25 or 30 cents.
Yeah, that's a very possible outcome. Like people believe that, I think people think in their head, if the funds went from say short 200 to long 200 in corn, that means we're going to rally a dollar. And that does not have to be the case at all.
No, I totally agree. And one of the things that is being talked about now is we're going to have a spring weather scare, and my presentation this week is really going to focus on the fact that these production scares are becoming more and more short-lived as we go on. Whether it was Ukraine 2 years ago, Argentina last year, Brazil this year, you do get the pop, but you better be ready to go because, like I said, I mean, if we get 25 or 30 cents out of a pop from the funds, I think that's probably, you better be ready to act on that, in my opinion.
Jared Creed, I'd probably make the argument that as it relates to, say, the U.S. farmer as a whole, I think the biggest problem right now is unpriced 23 bushels. I think there's a ton of it out there. I know it's highly variable. That's one problem. What are the other problems?
Well, I don't think it stops just with the 2023 crop either, though. They're going to have to catch up on 24 very soon, too.
Yeah.
So we have our work cut out for us, not only to get the farmer caught up, but the market, more or less, with what we know today, is looking for a catalyst. And back to your prior comment about it's hard to be very optimistic about row crop markets today, which, quite frankly, is maybe the most bullish thing on the radar. Out there at the moment, and we're kind of in the doldrums of the winter, expectations of funds doing XYZ. At the end of the day, the farmer is the biggest player in the market for the next 3 to 4 months until they get to the field. And are we really going to provide a catalyst to shake up the makeup of all other participants in the row crop markets today? And I don't really think there is. You're what, 60 days absent from any type of big government data right now? We're probably just sitting on the sidelines waiting for next quarterly stocks report and prospective plantings. And that, again, you got a 60-day span here with nothing really of major importance for any type of data dump into the market.
I feel like I've seen this situation before where it's, late winter, early spring, and the government projections are really bearish. The one that comes to mind is 2020, and I think that's when they had like a 3 billion bushel corn carryout projected. And things do change, but I don't think COVID's happening again. I don't know about the China demand thing. I mean, that was a unique year, but that's, if there's one nice thing to say, it's just that there's nothing nice to say and everybody's so pessimistic.
Well, yeah, the spring forecast and the USDA will have their outlook meeting at the end of February there in Washington, D.C. I mean, you know, as you suggested in your presentation down here, you know, they're just numbers, right? But I would say you better be ready. Last year, their projected corn yield was 181.5 or something like that, I believe, Joe. Is that correct?
Yeah.
And, you know.
And they're going to start higher than that this year.
Oh, yes, they are. And you know what? And you say to yourself, well, how is that possible? We've never, you know, record upon record upon record. Well, you know, you look at what happened this year, and everybody talked about how much drought was in the Midwest. And now you look at the production number. Granted, you know, the yield was a lot better than people thought. I mean, in some cases, 8, 9, maybe even 10 bushels better than people thought. So you think about what the crop had gone through last year versus, you know, I mean, the projections are what the projections are from USDA, but if you're thinking about ideal weather, you know they're going to come out with a 182.5 or something like that.
Well, Pete, you and I talk about this often, that with the current price set up relative to input costs, one of the easiest ways for the producer to possibly dig out of that hole is to do what? Produce more. Right down the path of maybe these concerns of what some of these USDA yield prospects may look like in the future. And I've been wrestling this in my mind here recently. I do think that the sharp decline in row crop prices specific to corn that we've seen in the last year has been one of the more quicker, precipitous declines relative to the cost of production for that crop that we've ever experienced. I am in no way, shape, or form suggesting that that is a market mover, but the only way for us to slow down some of this production is to probably create a little bit more financial strain on growing that crop. So now all of a sudden we're looking out to March, and what kind of acres are we looking at? What's that mix between corn and soybeans? Have we done enough damage in the corn market space to lose any corn acres? I don't think we're really at that point in time, which I'm rambling here a little bit, but
we're going to be down versus last year. It's not going to be 94-8 again or whatever it was.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Really? That's controversial, Pete. Can you elaborate?
You know, it really depends where you are, right? And like Jared said, we talk about this all the time. And in a lot of places, corn still pencils in better than beans. And I know, you know, my opinion that we could be unchanged, maybe even a shade higher is not what the norm says. But
that's not a popular opinion.
No, but the problem is with this, Joe, is that we will not have those numbers until the end of June, right? The prospective plantings report at the end of March, when you talk to Lance Honig and the folks at NASS at USDA, it's the report they'd love to get rid of because it's just useless, but it's going to have a big impact. So, you know, I mean, let's say you get a very low corn number and the market rallies on it. Again, to our point from earlier, you better be ready to react to it because there's nothing else to meet it suggests anything higher. But I would not be surprised to see corn acres unchanged. I could be totally wrong, Joe, but at this point, you know, when you talk to producers and talk to some of these guys, I mean, the whether it's the cost of money or the cost of inputs, just the cost of growing a crop, they have to be very, very careful. You know, they're watching it very, 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 very closely because this is going to be a tough year for everybody, and they have to make the choice about what crop to plant is going to pay them more money.
And you have an excellent point on we're not going to know that number until June because the last couple of years have proven very clearly that with today's technology, the farmer is willing to make last-minute changes.
Yep.
And we've seen it within our producer deck. I do think it's interesting. You know, 1 year ago at this meeting, we had all these projections of what, you know, at least our firm was estimating for cost production. And for an Iowa corn grower, we came up with a budget for the 2023 crop of $1,177 an acre. And that ended up being $1,217 an acre final, around a 580 break even across everybody's APH. So you fast forward into this year, I personally have not seen anything that suggests we're going to lower cost production by anything more than 5%. There might be situations where you may be able to drop it 7 to 8%.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of gets back to what I'm wrestling in my mind, that we've got this acre consideration, we have this yield consideration, but to Pete's point, in the event a market wants to move and it's enticed by lower acres and you have a short covering rally from the funds, that right there is the recipe for what the farmer actually needs for a profitability perspective for the next 12 months. And so they just better be ready to be act on it.
I've got an old crop question I want to go back to, and this is actually something after I spoke here in Phoenix today, somebody came up and asked, and I actually think it's an impossible question to answer. So we know that, generally speaking, we believe the farmers undersold as it relates to 23 crops. And the question was this: Joe, I'm seeing these basis pushes, and I'd love to take advantage of it, but I don't want to sell cash, and I'm not interested in a basis contract either because I don't want to be locked up. I mean, and the general thought is that, you know what, if the board rallies, the basis is going to give back half of those gains in the cash market. You know, if the board rallies 30 cents, basis might give up 15 or 20. Like, that's a very realistic scenario. So is it just an impossible situation, or is there a way to best navigate this?
Well, for the question that you received, it just sounds like the individual doesn't want to do anything.
Well, they want to take advantage of the basis and also ride the board higher, but it's tricky because you don't want to roll basis contracts, not in this environment.
No, but you only have so many tools at your disposal as well. So
you're kind of handcuffed. I mean, there's no great answer to it, I don't think.
I think the farmer caught up a little bit in sales in the last 30 days, and I do feel that was somewhat reflected in what we've seen in recent commercial reporting positions as well, relative to what managed money has done. But with all that said, I think the farmer's still probably a billion and a half bushel behind normal selling pace at this time of year.
Yeah.
And that, you know, the rooster's going to come home soon enough. And every day that this gets pushed off, we're just contracting our window for more and more production to come into the pipeline. And I do think basis is already starting a path that it did the last 2 years of a general weaker tone from here forward through the rest of the year.
Pete, any thoughts?
No, I would just echo what Jared. Jared's more in tune with the cash markets and that sort of stuff on basis, so I'll defer to him.
Let's jump to the Southern Hemisphere. I haven't looked at the weather forecasts today, but I saw the bean market was off. And today, we're taping here on Thursday. I know this is going to go out Sunday. Maybe they shifted Argentina around or something. But, you know, the Brazilian bean crop was going to be 165, and now it's going to be 150, if that, if you're to believe that. Yet the soybean market's lost $2. We went from 14 down to 12 in spot futures, and new crop hasn't acted well either. Can it be attributed just to the idea that Brazil is going to be off but not a disaster? Is it a Chinese demand thing? Is it both? What are your thoughts?
Well, I can easily take 10 off of Brazil, and it doesn't even change my thought process here. Take another 10 off. It
10 meaning 150 to 140?
Right. Okay. So what?
It has to matter, doesn't it?
No, I don't think it does. Because when you look at, you know, I mean, one of the issues that we have is that for the last year and a half, or maybe it's 2 years, Chinese deaths have outnumbered births. That's the first time that has happened, you know, in a while. So when you're looking forward on that, when you look at the crush numbers coming out of China, they're not great. And the other issue is that when you look at what was bought in calendar year 2023, I mean, it all went from Brazil. It all went from Brazil anyway because they were the low cost provider. So I think, Joe, you know, we hear this quite often as analysts where you say, okay, well, if production is 150 and demand is 140, you have 10. Now, if production goes down to 130, your demand is still 140, you're at negative 10. That does not happen, please. I mean, demand is moves lockstep and in some cases almost a 0.85 relationship between the two. When you have lower production, you have lower demand. It just is what it is. And I think that probably one of the problems we're going to have is that if the production goes lower, you're going to see lower interest from China, and they're going to buy most of their stuff from Brazil anyway, because Brazil, you know, is going to be low cost. Now, what's going on in Argentina with that new president? You know, that's a wild card as well, Joe.
Talk about logistics for a second. We've got this Panama Canal issue, which people don't talk about every day, but it's a big deal. Because the Gulf is our bread and butter when it comes to exports. I mean, PNW is great, but it's limited capacity. Is that part of our problem here? I mean, it definitely is, right?
I think it's part of the problem. But let's be honest about it. We're not whether Joe Biden stays as president or Donald Trump gets elected again as president, we'll never have favored nation status with China. And we can talk about, oh, they're a low cost buyer, they're a low cost buyer, they're a low cost buyer. But the fact of the matter is, they're in bed with Brazil now, right? Last year was the first year that Brazil passed us as far as global corn exports were concerned. That trend is not going to change. The gap between what the U.S. exports in soybeans versus what Brazil exports in soybeans continues to widen. It's once you lose market share, it's hard to get it back.
I'm very much apolitical when it comes to doing broadcasts like this, but there was an article, I'm going to mention this, there was an article in the Journal just this last week. It was called like Trumponomics 2.0, and what it talked about was if Trump gets elected, one of the very first things he's going to do is start slapping tariffs on again. And that's kind of a scary prospect considering that China doesn't seem to want to have much to do with this anyways.
No, the tariffs are something, and as far as, you know, if we look at some demand for the renewable fuels and that sort of stuff, I mean, the first thing you hear from Trump always is drill, baby, drill, right? That's right. All he's worried about is cheap. So, yeah, there's going to be some headwinds with no matter who gets elected at this point. It looks to be another two-man race, and same two men.
I don't get it either. There has been some positive renewable stuff out recently. You're a renewable expert. I'm going to call you an expert. Tell us something good about that, please.
Well, unfortunately, I have a little bit. So Valero announced you know, their net profit for a renewable was only 24 cents a gallon, and for renewable diesel was only 24 cents a gallon in Q4. That compares to $1.16 the year before. The problem, I think, with renewable diesel, Joe, is that we're still selling it into three states, right? We only really sell it into three states that have an LCFS, California, Washington, and Oregon. But what I'm going to focus on in my presentation, what I'm focusing on as well, is this commitment by the airlines to sustainable aviation fuel. Mm-hmm. I think it's, you know, that's coming, but it's not going to come this year, and that's the problem. You have to get past this year. By the time we get to 2025, you're going to have all these credits. The value of your corn when we start to turn alcohol into jet fuel, is going to depend on the carbon intensity score of your farm. It's something that Jared and I are working very, very closely with producers on. I think there's good news coming on the domestic demand side, as much as I'm kind of bearish on the export side, but there is good news on the domestic side, but it's going to take a while because sustainable aviation fuel, like ethanol when it started, is not a viable product without government subsidies, and there's government subsidies coming.
That's all I got for you boys today. Anything else that's on your mind before we let them run here?
Nothing here.
Excellent stuff. Thank you for joining us, everybody. I'm sure Chris and Shay will be back next week. Thank you for joining us here on the AgView Pitch.